Welcome to Richmond Law and Policy's podcast series. Richmond Law and Policy is a social justice law firm specializing in consumer protection class actions, representation of nonprofits and progressive businesses, and civil rights litigation concerning police misconduct. Our first season gets to the core of systemic issues regarding factory farming and is intended for educational purposes only. Good morning, everyone. This is your host, Jack, with Richmond Law and Policy. Today, my colleague Sage Max will interview Elsie Herring, a community advocate and activist who has spent decades of her life fighting industrial agriculture.
Elsie Herring lives on land in North Carolina that has been in her family for more than 100 years. The land has now been desecrated by sprayed hog waste, buzzards, flies, and horrible odors from the industrial swine operation that moved in next door in the late 1980s and began spraying manure onto the fields and onto Elsie's family property in the mid-90s. She's become an incredible advocate for herself, her family, and environmental justice since then in an effort to continue to fight this farm. Elsie, can you tell us more about the history here and how you got involved in legislation and lawsuits to continue the fight?
I got involved with this issue in the mid-90s, but before that, we had suspicions that our land had been compromised, but we couldn't really get a handle on it, and most of us, my brothers and sisters, we were living away from home, so we didn't really have much time to really look into it. 2 weeks is not enough. But once I got back home in 93 to stay to take care of my mother, who was 90 years old at the time, and I had a Down syndrome brother, he was 46. They had always lived together and they stayed in the same house that we were all born in. And after I got here, I started noticing peculiar behavior from my neighbor, who was the original hog farmer. And I saw him along with some other guys around a stake at the end of the road, which when I saw them, I started out there and they left. Eventually that stake was moved to where it is now, which is not where it's supposed to be. So that gave me a real clue that something was really going wrong. And I just kept noticing things until the day, it was one Saturday. We were sitting on the porch, my mother and my brother, before they passed, and my nephew across the street and one of my brothers had come home from New York, and we were just sitting out like a normal Saturday on the porch enjoying, and the hog farmer went to the south of my mother's house, to the back of the house, and he came back out in a short time with a sprayer connected to the back of a tractor, and he brought the sprayer out alongside in front of my mother's house, and that is where he turned it on. He detached it from the tractor, he went back down to the hog houses, and in a short time, he started spraying animal waste on us. And we had to scurry to get out of the way because it was coming over on us and it was stinking. It was like nothing we had ever experienced before. And it was particularly hard for my mother and my brother because they had never had to deal with someone being so mean to them when they're sitting on their own porch. And we knew him, knew the hog farmer all of our lives. We grew up next door to each other. Our property does join. It just doesn't join where he put it at now. I called the sheriff, and the sheriff told me that he couldn't get involved in this kind of issue. It was anything relating to the hogs, I would have to call the health department. So I called them first thing that Monday morning, and she told me she couldn't get involved in it, that I need to call DENA, which is now DEQ. So I called DEQ and made a formal complaint about them blowing animal waste on us. I spoke to Dave Holtzinger. I spoke to him many times. And he said he was going to address the issue, but he never did. So knowing that he was spraying animal waste on us, something is going wrong with the deeds, because why is he spraying on land that I know and he knows does not belong to him? So I went up to the Registered Deeds office to put together, you know, the paper, the deeds and the map and everything to make sure that everything was as it should be, and nothing was as it should be. My grandfather's deeds, three of them, I could find them where my mother's deeds were supposed to be. They put three of those same three tracts, they put it in my mother's name, but they never registered the deed. So one tract, my grandfather purchased four tracts out in total. In 1891, he purchased a 15-acre tract. In 1897, he purchased three more tracts, a 19 and 5/8 tract, 26 and a half, and a 3rd-acre tract. Well, they've taken all the 26 acres. The three remaining tracts of land, they put it in my mother's name, but they never registered the deed. The deeds are legal in terms of the paperwork. There's the book number, page number, proper signatures, the seal, but the deeds were never registered and I could never get them registered. And each time when I did go up to ask them why can't I register them, they told me that Mr. William Blanchett, who surveyed the land, he would have to register them, but he never did. He's now deceased, and the deeds still aren't, those three deeds are still not registered. The map that they put on file for my mother is not a true representation of the amount of land that we were supposed to have just in those three deeds. And there is no mention of my mother's house on her own map. And my mother's house was built in 1921. She lived on this 15-acre tract of land all of her life. So they carved out all the land around my mother's house. And they took the land within 8 feet of my mother's house, and that's where they have the spray field. They established the spray field there, and they started spraying animal waste on us there. And back of the house is where they have the two hog houses and a lagoon. And that's animal waste, and with the chemicals and everything just sits there. And whenever it gets to a certain level, he has to spray it out to keep it down. And that's when he brings it out along our beside the house and in front of the house and starts spraying animal waste on us. So I know they have taken our land. They are blowing animal waste on us. And the end game has to be they want to run us off our land. And that is what I'm convinced of. I think this is just the way to get us out of this neighborhood so they can develop it. We're the only Black family living in this neighborhood. So we're the weak link because, you know, we're poor, we don't have any money, we don't have a voice. So they took advantage of the situation. But then when I came home and found out to take care of my mother and really find out, look into what's going on with our land, that's when they decided that they needed to shut me down, I guess is a good way to say it. In addition to him coming out here spraying the animal waste on me and my complaining, I called Dena, and because I did call Dena, DEQ, I received a letter from Richard Burrows, who was the lawyer for the industry and a lawyer for Duplin County, which is the county that I live in. And in this letter, he stated to me that if I continued to call Dena with my groundless complaints, that I could be made to serve time in jail, or I could be made to pay the hog farmer back money for money that he's losing because of my groundless complaints. And my complaints were not groundless. And I had a right to call and complain because that's what Dena's job is to come out and investigate these kind of concerns. And that was just the road to being harassed. In addition to the letter, the hog farmer came up with a stick threatening to club me upside the head. His son came over twice with a gun. He walked parallel with where they had taken our land up to, with 8 feet of my mother's house, and he went over to where his father was standing spraying animal waste. And he just stood there with his hand on his hip with the gun, leaning on the gun. He never went down to the hog houses to kill any wounded pigs because he never left out of our eyesight. And when his father stopped spraying, he went back home. And the second time he came over, again, he walked down the property line where they have established it. And when he got ready to leave, he came over and he walked directly across in front of my mother's front doorstep with that gun as to be putting fear in us. I've been driving, and many times he would cross over in front of my lane, and I would have to come to a complete stop to let him go. And one Saturday, he came over uninvited, opened my mother's screen door, her storm door. He walked into her living room and he grabbed onto her chair and he shook her around and he cursed at her. And he told her that he could do anything to me that he wanted to and get away with it. And I, of course, I went to the law about it because I was he was the one that was trespassing. And then he had the nerve to grab onto my mother's chair and shake her around. My mother was 98 years old at the time. So, you know, that was just unacceptable. So because I went up to what I called the police, my local police department. They told me that I need to go to Kingsville. And every time I had to call the police on them coming over here, because every confrontation we had and there were many were over here on my on the land that we're maintaining, I had to make a 40-mile round trip to make a formal complaint when I should not have had to do that. And on one of the occasions, the magistrate in Kingsville was sort of annoyed because he had to come in when I should have been allowed to see the magistrate down here in the town of Wallace. But that's how the industry operates. Whatever they want, they get, you know, because they have all the right people in all the right places. So many times I would be maybe just coming back and forth, whatever, because we still have to live. And the hog farmer would see me, he would yell up in here and call me a bitch. He called me a bitch so many times that I really started getting tired of him calling me a bitch, because you people coming over here attacking me, and you're the ones that's stealing, trying to steal my family's land.
You said you knew these folks your whole life, right? You grew up next door to them.
What grew up next door.
Why? I mean, it's absolutely horrific, everything they've done to you. What was your relationship like before they started this farm?
We got along fine. Wow. We never had any issues. We got along fine before the industry came in. Mm-hmm. But since when the industry came in, I'm sure they gave him this glorified story of how he was going to be on, life was going to just be money rolling in. He would be living a life of leisure and luxury, when in fact, they were just saying what they needed to say to get him to sign on the dotted line, because they knew what they were after in the first place. Now, was Major a willing participant or was he duped? I have no idea, but I do know he came out to fight me just like he had a right to. And I even asked him one day on my mother's front doorstep, why are you doing this? This is mama's land. He said, and he just spat those words at me. It's my land. And my mom was sitting on the porch, so she heard this, because I had been telling her that it was about the land. And I know that finally convinced her that what I had been telling her was a fact. They're after this land. I really knew that. And that's why I did not stop pursuing it. And pursuing it with all these things that they were coming over here doing to me, then we have to live with all these rats. Because where you have feed and mice, you have snakes. And snakes were everywhere. I mean, water moccasin snakes, which are very poisonous. Then we had to deal with the buzzards. We have to deal with the flies and gnats. Then we had to deal with the odor itself and all the gases, the methane gas, the ammonia, the hydrogen sulfide, and all those other gases that were in that. We had to deal with all those issues, as well as trying to stay safe. You never know when these people are going to go on the deep end. My mother didn't deserve to be treated the way she was being treated. Neither did my Down syndrome brother. They had no clue to what was going on. You know, they had always been here on this land and never traveled too much or anything like that. So this was a total invasion for them. And they still wanted me, the industry and the hog farmer, to just turn a blind eye and just let it go. But I did not. I called my representative at the time, who was Representative Cindy Watson, and they spent millions of dollars to get her out of office. She came out and she looked at the situation and she couldn't believe what she was seeing. And they saw her come over, and the hog farmer's son came over first, started cursing at Cindy, calling her nigger lover and all these kinds of things, you know, like she had no right to come and listen to anything I had to say. Then his father and his mother came over. And they came over yelling and cursing at her and saying all kind of ugly things, you know, and about to her, about her, and saying her to ugly things to her about me. And Cindy stood her ground, though. She said, I represent her. She's in my district. She had a complaint. She called me, and I'm here to investigate it. And then they started saying, oh, she drinks all the time. She's sitting around and smoking. She's living off her mother and all these kinds of things. I'd worked 27 years when I came back home. I was self-sufficient, still am. I worked. I never lived off my mother. I always helped my mother, as my other brothers and sisters. We always took care of mom and Jess. We made sure to do that. So I went before the health department to show them videos of how this race was coming on us, how close it was. They provided TV. The TV did not work, so they never saw my videos. But Don Butler, who was with Carol's Foods, because before they married, Carol's Foods was a supply for the pigs. I showed Don Butler pictures, and he told me that he wasn't seeing what he was seeing. So I showed it to him from another angle. And then he just, you know, did like he was dusting off a little flake or something, and told me that I need to put myself in the hog farmer's shoes. That was not ever going to happen. I could never be the hog farmer, just like he could never be me. So that told me right there that he was telling me that you may as well let this go. So I continued to make phone calls. I wrote letters. We wrote letters. Cindy Watson wrote a letter to Attorney General Mike Easley on my behalf. And still, no one ever really did anything. Nothing had happened at that point in time. You didn't expect anything, but you still go through the chain of command.
You find out about like what resources were at your disposal or who you should be contacting? Because I wouldn't know where to start if I were in that situation.
Well, when I first started, I started with my telephone, my computer, and my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I started at the local level and worked all the way up to the federal. That's how you do things in order. The local level wasn't doing anything. The state level didn't do anything. And the federal level didn't do anything, except when we went to D.C. to speak to the EPA department about this issue. They did write a letter saying that the state of North Carolina did not do enough to protect the citizens of, you know, Duplin County that were impacted by these operations. And we invited them to come down to see firsthand. And they came down. So their finding was not only just based on our testimony, but it was based on the testimony of all these people whose homes they went and visited and listen to those people tell them the story, and at the same time experiencing the odor, because North Carolina in some areas is so condensed that you cannot help but smell it just like all the time. Maybe not as strong as other times, but you can definitely become offended by it. But they're breaking our human rights law. They're breaking the civil rights law. You know, I've just have a right to have clean air and clean water. All of those are violations of God-given rights, and they're violating them. And they're saying, oh, well, we don't smell anything. And what they smell, it smells like money. It does not smell like money. Money can get dirty, but animal waste and money do not smell the same. No way. But this is their narrative. And they control the narrative because they've got so much power. And they've got people in those, all the places that listen to them. And if you don't do what industries say, then you can be out of your job. If the hog farmer doesn't comply with what the industry says, then they can take the pigs from them. Industry doesn't want anything different, because if they did, when they entered into an agreement with the state of North Carolina in 2000, that the spray field and lagoon system was antiquated and should be replaced, they spent millions of dollars at the state of North Carolina. Michael Williams took the lead on this to identify systems. And five systems were identified to be used to replace this spray fill and lagoon system. But then the industry said it was too costly. And Michael Williams, who helped identify these systems, says that it's not too costly. See, the industry just want to make money, and that's all they're concerned about. There was even a time a couple of years ago that getting rid of the waste was the hog farmer's responsibility. But now that they've come up with this digester system where they can convert that animal waste into energy, now it's theirs. It's all about money with them. They don't care about who they have to stumble over to get to that bottom line, which is their money. So nothing was really happening in terms of someone saying, we're going to address this issue and ask you to stop doing it. So then that's when we start actively, and I was always seeking a lawyer because of my family's land, started looking at a lawyer that would take a case that would just open the door. So that's when the nuisance lawsuits came into play. And as you know, the five of those cases went to court, and we won all five of those cases. The cases are now under appeal. So I'm hopeful that when the verdict comes back, that those three judges will see the issue like the jurors did and honor their decision.
Could you tell me more about what it was like to be involved in those lawsuits? What was it like on your end? What were you doing while they were proceeding?
When we were able to get a lawyer, we had a set of lawyers that were kicked out of the state, and the lawyer that was remaining, a brilliant lady and a great law firm, she agreed to take these cases. And prior to that time, as a community organizer for the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network, we went into the neighborhoods, these communities, and we talked with the people and explained to them what was happening and empowering them with information and what they can do legally and what they should want to do, because they should be concerned about what's going on in their communities. So by educating people, teaching them how to organize, scheduling trips and meetings, and inviting them to come and further and continually empowering people, we were able to get people to sign on to be part of this litigation. And it was quite successful. And we still go into these communities and talk with the people, see what their concerns are, because it doesn't have to be about the CAFOs. It could be anything that's concerning them. And if we can find a way to help them address it, then that's what we do. So when we had the people engaged, then the rest was quite easy. Once we got the people engaged, you know, then they started realizing that they do have a voice, that they've got resources, they've got people coming from all around that's making presentations at some of these meetings and things, scientists, epidemiologists like Dr. Steve Wing, who was crucial in the scientific work that we were doing. When we told the people that everything was stinking around here and it was this and that happening, it was sort of like word of mouth. But then when Dr. Steve, Chris Haney, Virginia Guidry, there was quite a few of them, Jacoby Wilson, when all these people started looking into it and taking the scientific information from studying people that were living in these facilities, the impacts that they were having, like on our breathing, you know, your heart rate, you know, those kinds of things, then that was measurable. So Steve was able to get those statistics to support our claims. But we were telling these stories all before then, you know, so that just made it, verified it.
How does it feel to have to keep up this battle after all this time?
Taking our rights to have clean air and water, we should not give up that fight, because you have to have clean air and you have to have water. You can live longer without eating food than you can without drinking water. You have to have water. And why should our water be contaminated, full of disease, bacteria, viruses and stuff, and our air that we have to breathe? If you go into these communities, you'll see a lot of instances where there's asthma, COPD, kidney disease, cancers. All of these things to me are outgrowths from this filth that we're being forced to live with decade after decade.
Has all of this affected how you think about pork now too?
Yeah, yes. I've really pretty much, I've done a good job of eliminating meat. I do eat meat occasionally because I grew up eating meat. I grew up eating pork. We had a pig pen. We had our own pigs. We had hog killing day. You know, we had chickens running around here, but that was a way of life. Mm-hmm. And they were on the ground and sustainable. And when you went to the pig pen, you could smell it, but it was nothing like what's happening nowadays when you don't even have to go near the facility. You could be on I-40 and smell them. So it's totally different.
Right, yeah. Oh, that's really interesting. When did your family stop farming their own animals?
We stopped sometime in the 60s, as most people did.
Okay.
You know, and then it was in the 70s when these CAFOs were really introduced, but not widespread. And in the 80s, they just really started cropping up everywhere.
It sounds like you did know a little bit about CAFOs before your neighbor opened up his operation. What, I mean, did he give you any kind of warning? Like,
No, they did not tell us they were bringing that operation into our neighborhood. As a matter of fact, the industry says that they tell the people that they're coming in. No one told us. The very day that Hog Farmer sprayed on us, he came over to my mom's house, brought his new grandbaby, sat there and talked and had a nice time. And then within a short time, he started spraying animal waste on us. He never once said anything about the facility. We found out because they were building something back there, so we just assumed that it was on his land, and we thought nothing of it until we found out that, wait a minute, you know, that's not on his land, that's on my family's land. And that's when I started speaking out against it.
Again, it's still crazy to me that you're involved in this after so many decades. And I mean, what do you think has actually tangibly changed in your life since the first spray in the 90s?
Well, we've had some wins along the way. We were able to get a moratorium put in place in 1997, and it was made permanent in 2007. But they could not build any new facilities without putting in a comprehensive system, but the old systems were get a grandfathered in. So we're still living with those. So, and like I said, we were able to get the EPA to come down. You know, we spoke or gouged against the permitting, but that didn't really bring about any change. But we still brought it to the attention of the people in those positions that there's an injustice going on here, not only a racial injustice, but an environmental injustice.
Who do you think has been the most helpful advocate working alongside you, working for you?
I worked along and under Gary's guidance because he had a lot of experience dealing with this. This is what he was doing when I was introduced to him, and he was most helpful. He was the first to start booking me places to go tell my story, to share my story, introducing me in a room where there was people that could help, you know, lawyers, scientists, people of that nature, reporters that wanted to write about the story, you know, just opening up avenues for me to explore to get to where we are now. And Gary became really busy in other areas. He told me that I would be dealing with Naima Mohammed, who is now the co-director, lead organizer for the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network. And we're still in this fight together. Dr. Steve Wayne, he was in this fight from the time I met him and Naima at the same time. They came down together. He stayed in the fight with us until he passed away. A very sad day. Truly, he a good guy, real good human being. That's Dr. Steve Wayne. And there was Don Webb. He passed on. Of course, Rick Dubb, Larry Baldwin, and locally, Devon Hall and Dathula Baron Hall. You know, and as a matter of fact, I just saw them on yesterday. And there's probably others that I just can't think of right now, but those were people that were really hands-on. And from the almost the beginning, but if not, at least for the last maybe 20 years, I've been interacting with these folk. We've been working on this issue together, and we're still working on it together. We're in it until we can bring about real change, because it's time. This industry has been destroying the air and the water and the rivers, and it's, you name it. It's enough. It's enough already.
Is there anything else that you'd want to share with folks who are listening to this as a podcast?
Yes, do not become complacent and think that because something is not in your backyard that you're far removed from it. Because if there's an injustice going on in my neighborhood, it's going on in many, many, many other neighborhoods. We're not unique.
Thank you. That was fantastic. I really appreciate your time, Elsie. It's been really fabulous getting to hear your story again. I'm grateful for you taking the time to share it. I'm sure you're sick of saying all this stuff you're all here. It's really quite an honor.
But it's not over till it's over.
Thank you, Elsie and Sage, and special thanks to SRAP, Flag, One Rural, and many others for making this podcast possible. Thank you.